The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the midweek slash post week mailbag. This is where we answer your Detroit Lions questions live. Obviously, since we had a midweek game, we had to wait until after the midweek game to do the midweek podcast. So here we are Saturday morning after the Lions Thanksgiving Day game, ready to break that down, ready to answer any questions. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm one half of the midweek mailbag. You can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me, as always, to answer some of your questions, the managing editor of Pride of Detroit, at Eric Schlitt on Twitter. Eric Schlitt.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How was the rest of your Thanksgiving?
Busy. You know, it's nice to get home, see the fam, and since then, I had a couple comments to say on Twitter, but yeah. For the most part, it was nice, you know. Like, I think the game left people with a lot of mixed emotions, yeah. And I think that that's completely natural. And so that was a process, you know. You processed it that night, maybe even into to Friday, and here we are on Saturday, reshifting our focus.
That's right. And trying not too much to think about the other game that's happening later today. But
what game's happening? What game,
I don't know. No comment. By the time people are listening to this on the podcast, they already know what happened. So yay or dang it. Anyways, let's go straight into the mailbag. We've had, I think, at least five questions on one specific player. So I think I'm just going to form all of those questions into one. And let's talk about James Houston. And the first question I have, which is one that a lot of people have, is there an immediate concern about losing him to being poached after playing five snaps but getting two sacks?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. Right. Right. I mean, like, I think there's 31 teams that watch that game, and they're going to be looking at him and saying, I think I can do something with him, which is exactly the reason he got drafted. Right. So, yeah. He has a pretty minimal contract, and if you have a specific need as a pass rusher, I think that's a pretty legitimate concern. Now, at the same time, there's a big learning curve he still has to go through, right? He self-admitted, right? But yeah, I think there's enough concern that that the Lions really need to be considering what they're going to do with him.
Okay, well, let's get into that then. I'm not entirely sure if someone's ready to poach him Monday. I don't know. We'll see. But just to give clarity on the situation, in case you don't know, the Lions temporarily elevated him for Thursday's game, which means by now he is already back on the practice squad. That's just the way the new elevation rules work. They could have signed him to the 53, but this way that he gets a free pass back to the practice squad for now. But the rules state that anyone can poach a player off a practice squad and sign him to their 53. They can't sign him practice squad to practice squad. But whenever a team also expresses interest in that, the Lions have an opportunity themselves to sign them to their own 53.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, what do the Lions do? Because I think they're kind of in an interesting spot with Edge because, okay, you probably lost Julian for some extended period of time. So, okay, you could maybe do a one-for-one swap there, but Josh Pascal is probably coming back at some point soon. Romeo Okwara is definitely coming back at some point soon. Where does Justin Houston fit here? Charles Harris, right? Another guy injured, hasn't been playing. Even if you promote James Houston to the 53, is there really a spot for him on the defense when this team is healthy?
Well, I think it all hinges on Julian, right? I mean, if Julian's out, you need – there's a role for a pass-rushing linebacker, and that's something that I think they've introduced and utilized every week. And so if Julian's out, you really don't have one. I mean, Pittman can do it. Jared Davis can do it.
Yeah.
But really, Houston is a different cat, right? So, yeah, I think a lot hinges on Julian. And so if you think Julian's going to be out for – a couple of weeks, then yeah, I think it's worth it to try and make that move. I think with Romeo coming back, I think it's a separate entity because they kind of play different roles, even though it's both the edge.
Yeah.
I think Austin Bryant should be looking over his shoulder at Romeo. But here's the thing: keep in mind, on Monday, Trinity Benson goes off the roster, and they're going to have an open spot. And so if they feel the pressure, they can easily just sign him right then, and they have an open spot, and they won't have to make a move. Now, when Jameson's ready to come back, you have to make a move then. Yep. But you can kind of kick that can down the road. So for me, though, they've introduced this pass rushing edge, and they've relied on it pretty consistently with Julian. And so if he's not there, yeah, Romeo is your next best James Houston is your next best option.
Yeah, the tricky thing I think with him, and it's one thing that I still think goes a little bit overlooked with Julian, is his ability to drop into coverage. And not that Julian's excellent at it, but he's done it for a while. He's got the athleticism to do it. James Houston has the athleticism to do it. He just hasn't.
Sure.
And I know he has a linebacker background, obviously, too. So it's not a complete foreign concept to him, but I think his bread and butter in the NFL is going to be rushing the passer.
Yeah, and at the same time, like there's going to be a lot of fans screaming, he played linebacker at Florida.
Right.
They moved him for a reason.
Poorly.
Okay. They
tried him at linebacker here in training camp, and they're like, no, that ain't it.
Yeah. He's not there yet. Now, could he be? Absolutely. Is he there now? No.
We also don't really know because we never
exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen him in camp, right? Yeah. We've seen what we saw in camp. He wasn't there.
Correct.
Now, over the last 2 months, has he progressed? He absolutely could have, and we aren't privy to that. But the last time we saw him, he was not capable. And so that's fine. He said he wasn't ready. He's getting ready. He looked he's in that role. He is very good. And that's something that I think we've said throughout camp, too.
Yeah.
In this very specific role, he is very good right now. Can he be better? Absolutely. Is that worth the gamble? Yes, that's why they drafted him. But you get two sacks on six snaps, and you're going to get attention.
And the thing that the beyond the play, the thing that's really stood out to me is the way that coaches are talking about him. Because about a month ago, we heard Dan Campbell say, like,
"Yep,
I want an opportunity to see what he can do at some point this season." Mm-hmm. So he got that. Kelvin Shepard said, and this is the one that really stuck out to me. Kelvin Shepard's like, "Go ask Panay. Go ask Taylor Decker, who's been giving their lives hell in practice. It's James Houston." And so you're just like, oh, okay. Maybe I will go talk to Taylor Decker next week and see what he has to say about this guy. Because, yeah, that's really interesting. Because those guys, like, I know a lot of the focus after Thursday's game is on the guards. Those tackles are still playing their asses off and playing at a really high level. And if James Houston is giving those guys trouble, that's good news.
If you're the type of player that is giving starters problems in practice, then you are the type of player that's going to last. You're going to have a role in the NFL. The last person that we heard from the practice squad that was an absolute terror was Jason Kabinda.
Kabinda, yeah, I knew you were going there. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah. Like he was just a massive problem as a linebacker, and they were like, "We have to find a spot for him because he's just too good. His work ethic is too high. They loved his character. I mean, like, there were so many things about him. And when you work like that and you cause problems based on effort, you find a role. And so I'm not saying they're going to switch him to fullback. I think he is what he is in this role. But when you work like that, you're going to find a job.
All right. From one young, exciting player that we're just starting to scratch the surface of to another, Ian Rappaport dropped a very interesting tweet on Thursday that we almost ran with, but we decided it wasn't steady enough. But people are wondering the likelihood of seeing Jameson Williams this upcoming week against Jacksonville, because Ian Rappaport tweeted, let me quote it, "The Lions obviously won't have rookie Jameson Williams today, but as soon as he returns from a torn ACL, he looks to return from a torn ACL in college, he's coming soon. This week wasn't a full speed practice, but next week's will be. If he makes it through unscathed, there's a good chance he's activated."
Yeah, I'm not even worried about what Rappaport says. I'm looking at what the Lions do.
Sure.
And the fact that the Lions activated him on a week where they weren't even full practice tells me that they want to get him going, right? Yeah. Which means I absolutely think he's eligible. Rappaport, whatever. But honestly, if you read the tea leaves of what the Lions do,
yeah,
he could be good to go. Like, they've been doing, they return these guys from reserve lists, and then it's like 2 weeks and then you're gone. You don't activate him on a Thanksgiving week if you're not planning on bringing him back ASAP. And so I am on that ship of he's coming back for Jacksonville.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't a lot of other ways to interpret bringing him back in a week that they're not practicing, right?
Right.
It seems
right.
Like an absolute waste of the 7 days of his 24 or 21 day window.
Yeah. No.
But I'm considering how slow they've acclimated people who haven't. Dude hasn't practiced at all with the Lions, and you're essentially going to give him three and then get him going.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm going to go back to reading what the coaches say and putting my own little interpretation on it.
Yeah.
He can do one thing that no one else on the roster can do, and that is flat out run.
Sure.
And Campbell talked about that. Look, he's like, yeah, it's going to take him a while to get used to this and this and this, but he can run. And like right. that. And that's what they're going to want. They're going to want to put him up there and be like, catch me. Right. And so look, who's vulnerable? Probably Mr. Reliable Tom Kennedy. But unless, you know, they don't have to make the move on Houston, then that Trinity spot's there.
Sure.
But I think you're looking at I'm probably going to return in Jacksonville. I'm going to pull up the schedule here just so I have it.
Minnesota but after that.
Minnesota, you're probably going to get – yeah, so you're probably going to get, 12, 15 snaps max against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Minnesota, you're going to start opening it up to 20, 30, right? And then after that, you know, we'll see what happens. Jets, Panthers, that last month, you might be able to just unleash them.
Let them go. Four full games.
That's the acclimation window that I'm looking at.
Okay. That's optimistic. I guess I don't necessarily disagree with this because of the same reason. I can't figure out why else you would activate him during a walkthrough week. So we'll see.
You're playing him.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up too much because we know what that usually results in with this team. But okay. So I'm going to move to a more negative question, but I think it's a fair one. And I've seen a lot of people kind of bring up this point, the end of the Lions Bills game. Jared Goff's last pass is the missed deep shot on third and one. Josh Allen, on the other hand, hits a big 39 yarder to basically set up the game winning score. So Larry M asked on Twitter, does the final throw by each quarterback tell us everything we need to know about our approach to drafting a quarterback in April?
Well, here's the thing. Josh Allen is one of the top two quarterbacks right in the NFL. If you can draft Josh Allen, absolutely do it. I don't care who your quarterback
Will
is.
Will Levis.
Yeah.
I just said that to bother you because I know you don't like all of the comparisons he's already getting to Josh Allen.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, Josh Allen is an elite quarterback. I mean, there's no way around it, right? And they played that defense right. They caught They caught the defense in a wrong coverage. They put their best guy up against Will Harris, who is, you know, it's a hard matchup for him to try and cover Stephon Diggs. We talked about that leading up to the game. Yeah. So they put themselves in the right situation. They put it on Josh Allen's shoulders, and he's got the arm strength to make that throw, and he did. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what you expect from a team like Buffalo, because that's where they're at. And, you know, it's not like Josh Allen was Josh Allen when he was drafted either. Like, they've built their team to be this good. At the same time, I do agree that I think Goff's ceiling is we've seen it, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know how many times you can say, like, you know, my accuracy was off on that throw. You know what I mean? Right. In your breakdown of that play, you wrote that if they're going to keep trying this play, you know, it doesn't make sense to keep trying this play if you've never been successful at this play. And realistically, they haven't. And so that's one of the biggest issues I have with the play. But as far as the quarterback, I think they hope he can make it, because he makes a lot of other clutch throws. Like, he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, but he's not an elite starting quarterback, and he's never going to be an elite starting quarterback. And so to expect him to be an elite starting quarterback, I think, is expecting out of his range. So are you willing to, you know, what does that tell you? Like, are you willing to, like, take a average quarterback and try and upgrade? Are you willing to take that gamble? Cause they don't always turn into Josh Allen.
Right.
I don't know. But I think you've kind of seen, I don't know if Goff is capable of making that throw. And so, yeah, it's, I think we've seen the ceiling of Jared Goff.
Yeah. It's tough, cause Goff is not playing bad football right now. He had that middle of the season stretch where he had 7 turnovers in three games or whatever, but he's rebounded nicely from that. He's played, he's strung together some nice games in this winning streak, but games like Thursdays are the norm when you are a contender and you're playing a contender.
Yeah.
Games are going to come down to the last minute. Everything is going to be on the shoulders of your coaching staff and the quarterback. And you need a quarterback to elevate you. And I just don't know if Jared Goff does that. And I don't want to call him a game manager, because it's more than that. But he's been here for 30 some games or whatever now. And he's led one game winning drive.
Minnesota,
and that's it. And granted, he hasn't had a ton of opportunities, but he's had some. And he had an opportunity on Thursday, and he drove him down the field. But when they put the game in his hands, him and Chark couldn't connect. And I don't want to put it all on Goff, because obviously Chark didn't see the ball right away, right? Like, he's calling for the ball. Chark is raising his arm for the ball when the ball is already halfway to him.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some sort of miscommunication there. Goff did say he wished he threw a better ball, which is something any quarterback that doesn't play for the Jets is going to say. But I don't know. There's an argument to be made that the grass is not always greener, and that Goff is a, I don't know, QB 12 to 18, somewhere in that range.
Yep.
And maybe that's not something you can win football games with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can win championships with games like that, with quarterbacks like that.
Yeah. Look, it right now, the Lions don't have the talent around them to have an average quarterback and win tough games. That's the combination just isn't there.
But they might soon.
Absolutely. 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 And I think that's kind of what they're trying to figure out, right? But you run into this danger of falling into an Indianapolis Colts area, right? Yep. Where you have a really good team and a middling quarterback, and then that quarterback can never take you to the next level, and you're never able to really make that push. And so that's the cautionary tale if you're in the I want to keep Jared Goff camp. Yep. At the same time, you are taking a top 12 to 18 quarterback and potentially discarding him for a lottery ticket.
Yep.
And that lottery ticket, you really got to know what you're doing. And so Brad Holmes and company have proven extremely talented at identifying players, but they've never had to identify a quarterback yet, so we really don't know. And the only history we have of Brad Holmes with a quarterback is when he was on the team that drafted Jared Goff.
Right.
And so it's hard to really say what type of evaluation skills do they have for these quarterbacks, because the best talent evaluators in the world miss on quarterbacks because it's such a different game, right? And so it just depends on if you're willing to gamble. And I think, you know, when that Rams pick ends up being wherever it is, if it's in the top five, if it's top five and you're sitting there and you're staring at potentially one of the two really good defensive players or one of the two really good quarterbacks, you're really going to have to figure out which direction do we want to go. Do we want to continue to build and run with a middling $30 million quarterback, or do we want to take the gamble? And are we at that stage to take the gamble to move the team forward? And that's an answer I don't quite know right now.
It's a tough question.
Ideally we figure it out over the next 4 months, but right now I don't know.
And part of me why I feel like maybe the half measure is to keep Goff around for another year and draft a quarterback.
It depends on who it is, but yeah, that's an option.
Right, because you'll give Jared Goff one last chance and also a swift kick in the pants. Like, hey, we got a rookie quarterback now. Like, this is do or die for you. Mm-hmm. And then you also have your rookie quarterback. Like, you have both. And the downside to that is you still have that $30 million contract on your books instead of it only being $10 million if you get rid of him. But
in a quarterback with not a lot of confidence because you drafted his replacement.
Sure. Well,
here's the thing.
If that sort of thing affects Jared Goff as much as some think it might, and I kind of fall in that company too, like, I'm sorry, you need to be able to respond to pressure, not crumble to pressure. And if you can't, and if you crumble to pressure, then you're not our guy.
What do we know about him though? You know what I mean? Like, okay, look, if you take a quarterback in that top five, if you're going into the mindset with I've got a top five pick, and I'm going to try and get one of these quarterbacks, even if it means trading up to get one of them. If you're going in with that mindset, you've already moved on from Jared Goff, right?
That's also true.
If you're saying, hey, I'm willing to draft Levis, Levis, and try and figure out, you know, if he's the right. I still think if you're taking a quarterback in that first, you're going to end up, you've already probably made that decision to move on from Jared Goff, and you've probably done that before his bonus kicks in March, right? So, like, we're going to learn a lot about what their plan is, depending on what they do in March. But I think if they wait, and if a guy like Anthony Richardson decides to declare, and they're like, hey, he's at least a year away, you're probably still going to spend a first rounder on him, but you know, then you're looking at a Trey Lance type situation where he's not quite ready, but he's too talented to pass on. You could get a guy like Tanner McKee from Stanford, who's a little older, but like, you know, you could maybe get him in the second round with one of the, like, your first second round pick. If that's your goal, I who knows what's going to happen with Hendon Hooker because of his ACL now
and the age and all that. Yeah.
And the age, right. I mean, like ACL age and then system, he might drop to day three at that point. And then, I'm right. And so now you're like, that's not going to be your guy for the future. If that's the person that you're like, if you're a fan and you're saying, this is the guy I want, well, then you're keeping Jared Goff because he might not even play and who knows when he's going to be ready. Right. This is a similar, but regardless, it's going to depend on like which type of player are you targeting and when. And so I think we'll learn a lot in March. I think, and ideally we'll know before March, right?
Ideally, but I don't know. It does feel to me like the Lions are at this, you know, Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes fork in the road here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's always a great example to point to because it's like, okay, you have a mediocre to good guy in Alex Smith. You're making the playoffs, you're winning football games, but you need to take that next step. Okay. But it's not easy. Patrick Mahomes isn't always just waiting for you in the draft or, you know, you can't always trade up and just find him at whatever 10th overall or wherever they ended up getting him. But that speaks to the overall philosophy of you need an elite quarterback, not a good one.
Yeah, and look, and you can run into the Trey Lance situation where you can't unload Jared Goff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like with Garoppolo. You could run into a Jordan Love situation where he's just sitting there 3 years later because he's not developing. Yeah. Right. Right. So like, I don't know. It's
tough. There's really not. Everything comes with a risk attached to it. And that, that to me is going to make this next offseason fascinating and hard to predict and hard to criticize when we don't know if what's going to work out until 2-3 years down the road. That's the draft for you. All right. With that long discussion, let's take a break. When we come back, more of your Lions questions here on the post week mailbag, we'll say, here on Pride of Detroit. Twitch.tv/PrideDetroit if you want to watch us live. We'll be right back. And we are back here on the post-week mailbag. Myself, Jeremy Reisman, and Eric Schlitt answering your Lions questions. We avoided it in the first segment, but obviously the 3rd-and-1 decision to throw deep to DJ Chark has been kind of the narrative for the past 48 hours after Lions loss. I know you and I have a little bit of a disagreement on the decision there. So, you know, I wrote a whole long thing kind of debating the merits back and forth. And listen, I don't have a strong feeling one way or other. I see why the Lions did what they did. I see why people are upset in general. I think the aggressive move there makes some sense. It's a perfect opportunity to take a shot because you're going to get a favorable defense that's playing a 3rd-and-1. So you're going for a win in a favorable moment and you're trusting your big players to make big plays. But I also get that this team was actually really good on short yardage situations on Thursday. And so a 3rd-and-1 is a very manageable down that even if you don't score a touchdown on that drive, you almost guarantee that you burn the rest of the clock and prevent Josh Allen from coming back in regulation if you get that first down. So, Eric, is there a side you firmly stand on at this point, or are you also kind of in the middle ground here?
Oh, no, I have a side. Okay. I don't like the call. I understand it. I understand the logic of going for the throat at the end there. I don't like the option. I don't like the option there, right? I like the idea of being able to get the first down and then you have options, right? If you get that first down, yes, you maybe have to use a timeout because you maybe run the ball, you get a running clock, maybe use a timeout. That's fine. You still have at least one timeout and you have now 3 downs to figure out what you're going to do. If you do something on first down that gets you into like a 2nd and short, you're back in that situation again where you might get a favorable defense. You don't know, but by putting all of your eggs in one basket, you're asking a player who his chemistry isn't maybe quite all the way back because he's returning from injury to make a play. He's caught what 2 balls for 14 yards the entire game so far. On the opposite end, you've been highly productive with rushing the ball. You've been creative in how you get things open. You've had really good 3rd down plays where you've converted. And so I would have liked to have seen a better play to give you a new set of downs. You still have a timeout. Who knows what you could have done after that point? Maybe you still end up kicking the field goal, but you take the worst case scenario off the board if you get that first down. And the worst case scenario is you're not going to give the ball back to Josh Allen with a chance to win the game in regulation. Now, look, if you still kick a field goal to tie, you still could lose to him in overtime. That's part of the game. But in my opinion, I like living to fight another day. I like giving yourself more options. I like being able because I don't think that was the only chance to score a touchdown, right? And I know the time would have been working against your favor, but I think you would have had other opportunities to do it, especially with the timeout in your pocket. So I didn't like the call. And honestly, the you, I pointed this out before, you wrote it yourself. They haven't hit that play yet. And they've tried it before a couple of times and they haven't hit it. So you're using a play that you haven't been successful on to push your chips all in on. And that I don't like.
To me, I think it also, it's worth exploring whether a third and one run is automatic in that situation, because it's not. And notoriously, the Lions have struggled in those situations. Like I said, though, they were doing pretty good in that game in those situations, but you're down your two starting guards. Ed Oliver has been eating your lunch on the offensive line for a lot of that game. How many times was Jamal Williams tackled 3 yards in the backfield? Mm-hmm. That game, like a lot. They had a lot mm-hmm. of stuff runs. There are other options, of course, right? Like just a couple plays earlier, they had run the end around on 4th and 1 to Amon-Ra for 7 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, but all of those come with an inherent risk. Like you run an end around like that, you risk losing a lot of yards, and sure. Lions cannot afford to lose a single yard in that situation, right?
What's the worst case scenario if you run it and don't get it?
Well,
you're in the same spot you're in.
Well, you lose 3 or 4 yards is much worse. The only benefit that you don't get passing the ball is that you make Buffalo burn another timeout.
But I'm saying if you don't convert on a run, it's the same result as if you don't convert on a pass. Well, you're still in the same situation.
Unless you lose yard.
Right.
Which is possible. Like I said,
But a couple of yards, it's not. Buffalo
had 9 guys at the line. They were selling out on either a blitz or a run.
But look at what you. I mean, but like what you pointed out with St. Brown, like they use that end around. Like, you've been pounding it up the middle all game. Like you have to have some sort of outside pitch. You have to have some sort of like why.
But all those come with
run rub routes on in that situation. It baffled me. Like you pull up those dots again. You pull those dots up again, there was a whole left side of the field that you could have run a quick. You can take your tight end and fake block and drift them out. Like there's options that they could have done. Like you have all these 2-point conversion plays in your pocket, I'm sure. Yeah. This is a 2-point conversion play. Like you can use that because you're trying to get the same thing, right? Yeah. So for me, putting all of your eggs in a basket that hasn't worked yet and expecting it to work. Hey, look, imagine
that's
you have
fair,
a basket with no bottom and you just keep throwing eggs in it.
But the problem is
maybe the bottom will be there this time.
Every play is an all or nothing on a 3rd and 1. It just is.
No, it's not. No, well, no, it doesn't have to be. You can live to fight another day.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think it was a mistake not going for it on 4th and 1?
No, because you should have gone for it on 3rd and 1.
No, but you should have done. Okay, throw that play behind. 4th and 1. It's 4th and 1.
Right. No, you kick it.
You're either going for it or. I think that's a worthwhile discussion that not a lot of people are talking about.
Well, go ahead. I mean, here's the gamble. It's like when you score and you go for 2, but you're doing it from, you know, farther out, right? Like it's that if you're going to go for the throw on 3rd down, why not go for it on 4th too?
I think that's
this juxtaposition.
Right.
But that's the juxtaposition of why I don't like the call on 3rd down.
That's fair.
If you're not willing to go for it, right? Like why change your mentality on the next down? Like if you're saying I'm making this throw because I'm trying to bury them, then bury them.
Yeah.
Then try it again.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't take another deep shot on 4th and 1. I just think it's interesting that, you know, you're putting your trust into Badgley, a guy who just missed a 29-yard field, a guy that 4 or 5 weeks ago you wouldn't allow to kick a 50-yarder because you didn't think he was capable of doing it. You put the entire game on the line and then win.
Right?
Again, like you go for it, you give yourself a second chance at 1 yard and then another opportunity to run essentially the rest of the clock off. But anyways,
I would have just done it on 3rd.
I know.
Like,
and then let's say you run it, you get stuffed on 3rd, but you don't lose any yards. Mm-hmm. Then do you go for it on 4th?
I'd still kick it then because that's my mentality. But
that's fair.
But like because you're staying consistent though. You're like you've got to be thinking about both plays, right? So, but if you're gonna be aggressive on one, you'd be aggressive on the other.
I don't want this to overshadow both the job that I think Dan Campbell mm-hmm. is doing with the team, and Ben Johnson. I thought these past two games, Ben Johnson has been at his best. There were a lot of really creative plays on Thanksgiving, and they, you know, they were in a lot of third and shorts. They were 3 for 3. They were really 4 for 4 on fourth down on Thursday. One doesn't count because they took the penalty on a 4th-and-1 when they actually converted on the 4th-and-1 anyway. So, like, I think Ben Johnson is really killing it. And so I'm assuming it was his play call on the 3rd-and-1. And so people are going to hammer him for that. But I think the offense right now is overperforming because of him. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you look like the running game has not been good for a couple weeks. The passing game has not really found an explosive degree to it yet since all the wide receiver injuries, yet they're still scoring 30 points ish in the past few weeks. And so
31.
Yeah. I really think Ben Johnson
31 the two prior
is doing a great job getting guys wide open. Like there are some plays when there's not a defender 10 yards within Amon-Ra St. Brown. How does that happen? He's your only receiving threat right now.
And I mean, this echoes to the game prior, because we haven't really sat down and talked about the Giants game either.
Yeah.
And that end around to Khalif Raymond was the same play, essentially, right? The same concept that he did with Amon-Ra on that fourth down. Like he's not scared right now to throw off and against the grain a little bit. I just don't like going to a play that hasn't worked yet and hoping it does.
Yeah, it's a little bit too much trust in your players, which is a hard thing to really be mad at, because you want to trust your players, right, to make the plays. And again, if it's worth always pointing out that if that play connects, like we are going absolutely bananas right now, because the Lions are on a 4-game winning streak and just took down one of the best teams in the NFL and have a real shot at the postseason.
Yeah. Honestly, if they execute it properly, that's 6, even though I don't like the play call. That's still 6. He just golfed through it before Chark got open, right? Like Chark was open. Like he had separation and there was no over the top help. He was gone. Yeah. But Goff was anticipating a different route, threw it on the outside shoulder and short. And Chark was just like, I'm just going to run past this guy. And so there was a miscommunication. Yeah. The pair, when the locker room was open, the two of them were still off in the corner
talking
pretty much the entire time the locker room was open. Jared Goff had to go to the podium.
The thing is,
but the two of them were like,
that ball didn't need to be perfect. Mm-hmm. That ball just needed to be in the vicinity to give one Chark a chance to just go up and get it, or two, get a defensive pass interference. Like do the stupid play in the NFL where you throw it short and your receiver tries to come back to it, and the defender gets in the way.
Well, that's kind of what he did. That's kind of what he did, right?
But he threw, if it would have just been short and not shortened away, you know? I don't know.
He went outside.
Mm-hmm. There are so many different balls that could have been thrown there that would have resulted in the Lions winning that game and golf through.
Probably shouldn't have called it, because you know he can't make that throw.
But stop it. We're moving on. We're moving on. We can go with the whole segment with that, and we almost did, I think, here. But Garrettson has an interesting question about some post-game comments that went viral here. Taylor Decker in his post-game press says, this isn't the same
interview.
Effing same old Lions. Yeah. He's the longest tenured player on the team. It was 7 years. So do those words carry a little bit extra weight knowing that they're coming from Taylor Decker?
I'd hope so. I mean, he's seen the progression, right?
Yeah.
Like in his time, like when was the last time they had a 3-game winning streak? Wasn't that like 2017 or something like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that would have been like when he was a young pup in the league still. Second year rookie or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So he's probably hasn't really even experienced what they've done. And so geez, I would hope that those words carry some weight.
My only, and I hate to compare it to this game, but my only, I think about the Chiefs game a couple years back when the Lions were like, they were what, 3-0-1 or something going into that Chiefs game in the Matt Patricia era. They take the Chiefs to the wire and they lose at the end. And I feel like we're getting a lot of the same vibes we got out of that game, where it's just like, Okay. Lions might not be at the apex yet, but they're there. They're right beside the league's best. Things are headed in the direction. Once they get over this little hump, like, boom, mm-hmm. contender. So the Lions, like, part of me, and this is the wet blanket that sometimes overtakes my brain, is just like, this team better go beat Jacksonville. Because if they don't go out and beat Jacksonville next week,
mm-hmm.
this almost win against Buffalo is going to be so far in the rearview mirror that no one's going to care.
The thing that was almost a staple in the Matt Patricia era was that he could design a scheme against some of the better teams in the league. He did it against the Patriots, right? Beat the Patriots that second year, right? Did this against the Chiefs. He exposed the Rams. But he could not do anything else to save his job, right? Like, he was terrible on a game-to-game basis. But he had that ability to scheme up plays again, or scheme up the play designs, or game designs, I guess I should say, against some of the best in the league. And he did it multiple times.
Yeah.
So I know you might be getting those vibes because the blanket is sopping on top of you right now, but I don't look at it like that. Like I don't look like Patricia had those anomalies. Like, that was just part of the thing. Like, I don't, for this team, I don't know. Maybe they'll prove me wrong and they will be this anomaly team that can, you know, put together a few things and then can never take the step. I mean, that's what we're going to figure out, right? That's what we're going to find out,
I guess,
over the rest of the season and into next season. But like, I don't think you can compare the two because of how the team is designed, how their winning games are different. Yes, this one game has a lot of similarities to this other, but the lead up to it and I think is different. And, you know, we'll find out if they can continue it. Yeah, next week in Jacksonville. Right. And look, they're home for that game, right?
Yep.
And so that's going to help things as well. And if you can come out, punch that team in the mouth, then yeah, you're gonna look a lot more legitimate than the Patriots game.
Yeah. I mean the biggest difference, I guess, and I mean they were 2-0-1 at the time, so maybe it's not that big of a difference. You're 3-0 in November versus 2-0-1 going into the Chiefs game, but it does feel like the Lions have played pretty consistent football in November, mm-hmm. including Thursday's game. And that's what you're looking for, right? That's if you want to, I mean, how many times have we heard the front office and Dan Campbell say, like, we are not looking for one run at a Super Bowl. We are looking to become one of those teams that have been consistently at the top. And the way you do that is play consistently. And the way you win is play consistently. And Lions played some really darn good, consistent football in November. And that's the first time we can say that in a very long time. They were on the verge of winning 4 games in November for the first time in 60 years. 60, 1962. Damn close to doing it. And that's something to hang your hat on. I know no one wants the moral victory stuff, but it's something.
Yeah, I'm so tired of the moral victory comment. Like, look, progress is progress. It doesn't have to, like, just because you are talking about the team improving, it doesn't mean that you're saying it's okay with the fact that they lost. Like, it drives me nuts, right? Like, things don't have to be so black and white all the time. Okay. Yeah. Like, I can appreciate that the team is progressing in a positive way, but also not like that third down call. I can do both. Just because I say the team is progressing doesn't mean I'm excusing end of game mistakes or anything like that. Like, I'm going to go down a tangent. Let's go back to the audience because I don't want to get off on another thing.
You know, we've gone long this segment, so I'm going to end on this one. And
you're going to end on that ridiculous?
No. I got one more. And
oh,
it's
good.
Another ridiculous one. But
awesome.
Okay, let's look at the schedule. Home Jacksonville. Home Vikings, Jets, mm-hmm. at Panthers, home versus the Bears, at Green Bay to mm-hmm. close it out.
Mm-hmm.
how likely it is a run of the table?
Well, I think running the table statistically would be very difficult, right? Because like the chances of that happening are pretty
right.
You're going to run into a hiccup here and there, right? Like something's yes. going to happen.
But
Vikings are of course certainly very good still.
Yes. I think the reason middle, people are asking though is like that gets you to 10-7, which is probably a pretty safe. You're in the playoffs. You're going to be in the playoffs at 10-7. 9-8, I would say, is a toss up at this point.
Nah, the way the NFC North or the way the NFC is,
but I don't, like
I don't think it's as much of a toss up.
Washington is starting to surge. The 49ers are starting to get good. Like Washington and 49ers and Dallas, like those could be your three wildcard teams and no one would bat an eye. I think most people would say, okay, those guys, sure. those teams are pretty deserving. And that's assuming that the Giants sure. fall off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying 9-8 does not necessarily get you in. I think it's about a 50-50. Sure. So the Lions either have to run the table or have one loss along the way to, so let, I'll throw those two together. How likelihood is 5-1 or 6-0 for a 4-7 football team? By the way,
5-1 is a lot. I think going 6-0, you're going to have like very, very small odds of going 6-0. To be honest, yes. I think going 5-1, you're getting a lot better. I think that's more achievable. But yes, like you pointed out, you're talking about projecting more wins than they currently have through right. 12 weeks. Right. right. So like, yeah. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities though, because Jacksonville's beatable. The Jets, I don't know, who knows what's going on with the Jets, right? The Panthers look like a disaster.
Yep.
Who know? The Bears are going to be hard. Like they're going to be, they're going to be hard.
Yeah.
And the Packers are going to be hard. Like Maybe. Those division games are not gimmies. Like all three division games are going to be hard games.
Yeah.
The other three games, you're going to have a lot better chance of winning. But yeah. So running the table. Yeah. I don't know. That's challenging. 5-1 is still going to be very hard, but 5-1, I think is more realistic than 6-0. I mean, that's
yeah. I mean, the Vikings game, clearly the toughest game on the schedule remaining. Like no question.
Yeah, but they could beat them. But they can beat them, right?
Again,
the last three times they've played the Vikings,
yeah.
it has come down to like a field goal, right?
Yeah, or right? Like, the Lions game winning touchdown, yeah, last year,
right? Like, right. Essentially, it's essentially come down to the last like second. Minute, right? In the last yeah. or second, yeah.
yeah,
right. In the last like three games, it's not like. They're not going to be able to go up against Minnesota and beat them. Like they can beat them.
Yeah.
It's certainly going to be hard. And Minnesota has had some magic this year. The thing is you get some Giants vibes from Minnesota still, right? Like,
I mean, there was a Cowboys bit, game, but the Cowboys are damn bit, good. A
little bit.
I don't know. I don't want to be labeled as a Vikings guy again, but here's what I will say.
You're never shaking that.
I think week 18 against the Packers might be more winnable than you think, because I think there's a good chance that the Packers are shutting things down. No one tanks last game of the season like the Packers, except one very notable backup quarterback game that we won't bring up. And then the Bears game, I agree, is going to be very, very tough, assuming that Justin Fields is still playing.
Yeah.
He's dealing with a shoulder injury now, obviously. We'll see where that goes.
That's but anyways, what a month away, though.
I just think that that last three-game stretch could be very, very 3-0-y. But the Lions are going to have to get there first by taking the Vikings down. Maybe.
Yeah, the Jets are a disaster on offense, but their defense is still really good, very too. Good. You know what I mean?
But I think so I like those matchups better than vice versa. I would rather play a bad offense and good defense, given what the Lions' strengths are, than the vice versa.
Especially because you're got a chance to have a healthy DJ Chark, a healthy Josh Reynolds, and J-Mo back, and maybe DeAndre Swift is a little bit, you know, 100% getting closer. Oh, I mean, like, right. And if you get your guards back, I'm just saying,
offense, you're right. Yeah,
you can being There's able to return your offense to form. Yes. Yeah, you can return your offense to form a lot easier than your defense is making slow incremental progressions. Your offense can go from here to here really quick. Just based on getting a couple guys back.
All right. I'm going to go
agree with you. I'd rather face
Yeah. I got to take a cold shower here because we're getting worked up after a loss here. Still thinking the playoffs and all that sort of stuff, knowing all of us know that.
Well, last time we talked on this, I said I thought I wasn't willing to rule the playoffs out.
And I guess we're still there.
You laughed at me.
I said, going into the Bills game, I said playoffs are a possibility, regardless of what happens on Thursday. And so I guess I have to stick with that. So with that, we're going to close things out. I think that was a bulky-sized mailbag podcast this week. We're going to have our post-game podcast as well, recording on Sunday. It'll be up on Monday, so you'll get some more talk on Lions Bills where we talk a little bit more specifically about the game. And then we'll have a big blowout 15-hour stream on Tuesday, November 29th, where we're going to have a bunch of Lions-related guests, a bunch of people you aren't going to miss. It's our way to close out Movember to make one last push to donate money to the Alzheimer's Association. There'll be more information about that stream on Monday on the website, or you can just go to our Twitch page, twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit. Turn on alerts so that you get alerted every time we go live. But 15 hours of Lions content coming into your way Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday. You don't want to miss it. But until then, my name's Jeremy. That's Eric. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you guys soon. It's Chaos. Be kind.